All right, good to have you with us. Hour number three underway. Metal Chris back in our D.C. Half Street studios. I'm working from the home office today. I got to get a new car after the show. I mentioned this at the very end of Friday before we went to the weekend break. Yeah, they did recover my stolen car about 9 days later. However, despite not having much obvious damage to it, it was totaled. Yeah. And I got 5 speeding tickets. Well, I didn't. The butt munches that stole my car did. But I've got to now deal with it.
I mean, I guess if you're going to steal a car, you're not too worried about speeding tickets.
Correct. Correct. Especially when they're digital speeding tickets and all that stuff. Yeah. But you'd think, like, if you're speeding in a stolen car, that it might stand out a little bit. And you might, like, be subject to maybe getting pulled over by actual police
officers.
Photos
from those things too, right? They take
what's that?
They take pictures of you when they.
Well, yeah, oh yeah, no doubt. But what I'm saying is, if you're speeding right in a stolen car, don't you stand out a little bit more to a cop that might be monitoring or pulled over or radar gunning speed and whatever?
The problem is, you get like another one of those little stars, like in Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, I don't. Well, you have a file on that again. I don't.
The more the police are mad at you, the more stars you get. It shows you like how hot you are, basically.
Yeah. So here's the thing. Like, they didn't notice anything. So I got these 5 tickets that I got to clean up, right? But here's the deal. In addition, I've got to buy a new car, right? So I had to go car shopping and through that process this weekend. And now I've got to go do the financials. And first I've got to go to a store to send back my title to my insurance company so that I get the money. So it's a quick, you know, process. So anyway, I don't want to say too much or whatever, because I want to be fair to our other, like, car sponsors and whatnot on the show. I'm just doing what I've got to do because, you know, it's my life. And, nobody quite honestly takes care of me. So I got to take care of myself and I got to do what's best for me. But it's a pain in the ass complicated procedure. Right. I mean, you got to sit there for hours and do paperwork and contracts and, you know, financing and this and that. You know, I had a meeting already about it this morning. I got to go there right away after going again to the UPS store to express mail my title to my insurance company. I mean, so many phone calls, so many texts, so many emails, so many this, so many that. It's just been a night, and I still have more to do it even after today. I got to bring back the rental car tomorrow. I've got to go to Prince George's County District Court on Thursday to fight these tickets. Because when I went there last week, they gave me information and documents to send back to fight 2, because I only had 2. Then I got 3 in one day.
Oh, man.
Right after that. So I have a total of 5 now that I have to fight.
Are they all separate hearings, or are you just going and knock them all out?
Yeah, they're all separate hearings because they're all separate tickets.
That's so inefficient.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway. So it has just been, I don't mind telling you, listen, I'm going to get a new car out of the deal. So nobody should feel bad for me. I'm getting a large enough down payment that it cushions the blow. But it is still a process that, instead of, like, I don't know, actually doing my job, and instead of, I don't know, God forbid, resting for once in my life, I've had to deal with every day in some way, shape, or form for 3 weeks now, almost 3 weeks. And it's not over yet. All because some ass clown decided to walk into our parking garage under the building, under the radio station, and steal my car in the middle of the day. Now, it would help if the secured parking lot attendant was actually, like, doing their job. So they've switched around some things, I've noticed. I'll just say that. I don't know what power they have, but I have noticed they've switched around some things since this all happened. But the bottom line is, it has sucked. But I am getting a new car, and I'm excited about that because it's got some pickup, and it's not by any means a sports car, but it is a, let me just say, a sports version of a commuter car. Let's put it that way. So your boy is going to have some giddy up. Giddy up, man. It's kind of like that TCU running back last night pulling away from North Carolina with a couple of wham blocks. Bam. Gone. See ya. Done.
See, now I'm excited to pull up next to you at a red light and just start revving a little.
Well, I don't know about that. What kind of you have a fancy car, right?
It's not like, that fancy. I got a Mustang.
I mean, that's pretty fancy. I'm not getting a Mustang.
Like a Corvette or something, though.
I mean, listen. Well, thank goodness that you don't have a Corvette. I mean, a Mustang. What is it? A Mustang? What is it? A 5.0? Is that?
No. I don't know the GT. Those are super expensive.
Okay.
No.
So what?
Talk to the boss man about getting me a big raise. Maybe I'll get the GT next time.
Yeah, there you go. What kind of Mustang do you have?
It's actually got the EcoBoost engine, which living in the city, I actually fantastically love.
What does that mean? It's just got like it takes.
It's not a hybrid. It's not a hybrid. They have, okay, I don't know how much you know about car stuff, but you know how like a turbocharger works, mm-hmm. where they like to compress the air they put into the cylinders, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it sort of works like that, but they also compress the gasoline that they put in there. So it's like everything's like super compressed. And they have like a system of doing this that essentially makes it much more fuel efficient by doing it this way. So since I live in the city, you know, I actually really enjoy this because I'm pretty much driving city miles all the time. And, you know, my old Mustang, I would get something like 12, 13 miles to the gallon. On this one, I probably get around 22 to 24.
Interesting.
In the city, you know, so... Pretty good for a two-door.
See, what I like about the car that I'm getting is it's a hybrid. I don't have to plug it in. It charges as you brake, which I'm constantly
on. Oh, yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Right? I'm constantly on the brake. So it's going to charge. I'm going to get, supposedly, according to all the information that I have, like 50 miles a gallon.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
You know, and being that I commute about 79-ish miles a day round trip through heavy traffic, especially on the way home.
Well, when you're idling, it just runs off the electric, right?
I'm not sure exactly how that distribution works.
I think that's how
works,
most hybrids work. It's, yeah. The thing that costs the most in like your gas, like your fuel consumption, is when you accelerate from a stop to whatever speed.
Right.
So like that's you're going to use gas on. But I think when you're idling, most of those hybrids, you just
that's
run off
question.
The electric motor.
I got to double down and ask that. I forgot. I think if he mentioned it to me the other day, I forget.
Well, if you're in commander's traffic a lot, let's say, that might be quite good for you. So.
Yeah, exactly. All right, back to what we have to talk about, which is not my car, Odyssey, and my car getting totaled and my car getting stolen and what a nightmare it has been. But it, in case you can't tell, it's been a rough 3 weeks. Obviously, everything happening with Rick Snyder, we'll remember our friend and our colleague this Saturday morning in Maryland. So it's going to be a sad, emotional day on Saturday. Been dealing with that along with the car, along with life, along with everything else. Nothing else stops. And as a matter of fact, it's just one continuous nonstop churn. But nevertheless, that is life. So one thing more on Dexter Lawrence that I forgot to bring up. He was double teamed, according to NFL Next Gen Stats, almost 64% of the time on his pass rush snaps last year. 63.8. That's the highest rate of any player with at least 200 plus pass rushes in a season since that stat started being tracked by Next Gen, which is, you know, again, not just somebody evaluating. It's all the Next Gen technology with the chips and all that since 2018. So, the second highest was for Lorenzo Fatusaki, then of the Jets, at 54.1%. Kobe Turner, 2 years ago of the Rams, 54%. DJ Reader, 53.2%, another nose tackle, defensive tackle. And Kurt Hinnish, who I've never even heard of, Houston, 2023, 53.2%. With, again, minimum of 200 pass rush snaps. And Dexter Lawrence was double teamed again, nearly 64% of the time. So what does that mean? Why do you say that? Well, it's really important to note that I don't think the Commanders are going to be able to do that, because if you double team, truly double team Dexter Lawrence as much as he was last year. And remember, he ended the year with a pretty serious injury. If you do that, you are going to get killed by Abdul Carter, Brian Burns, or Kayvon Thibodeau. I think you're going to have to just man up and trust that Tyler Biadasz and occasionally Brandon Coleman with a chip or a push or something is going to be able to handle Dexter Lawrence. But depending on alignment, depending on, you know, strategy, what have you. To me, this is why I fear the Giants. Not because I grew up a Giant fan, which I am no longer a Giant fan, and haven't been for years.
Don't tell Paulie.
Yeah, well, Paulie, again, punch drunk earlier. Paulie can believe whatever he wants to believe. Doc can believe whatever he wants to believe. Not a Giants fan. Was a Giants fan. Grew up a Giants fan. I root for the Commanders. Let me be clear. I root for the Commanders. I want the Commanders to win. I think the Commanders will probably win. Not sure, definitely, but I'm leaning there. But my point being is, you can't just sit here and double-team Dexter Lawrence all day. That doesn't work. And this is why it's so important to be ahead of the chains, and this is why it's so important to be good, if you will, on first down, on offense, so that you're not in second and 10 all day long, so that you're not in second and 9 all day long, so that you're not in third and 9 all day long. Because if you are against that pass rush, whether you double-team Dexter Lawrence or not, you are not going to win. You are not going to have success if you are in second and third and long all day. You're just not. Period. I promise you that. That has nothing to do with anybody or anything other than, man, this is football. This is how you win. This is how you lose. If you are better on first down than they are consistently, I believe you will win that game. If it is second and 3 versus second and 9, you have a much greater chance to win that game consistently. Not one time, consistently. Again, doesn't guarantee you anything. Obviously, the ball could bounce a number of different ways, turnovers, what have you. But the point being is, staying ahead of the chains, not getting behind penalties, and worse, becoming second and 14 on a regular basis, that type of thing. Okay? The Commanders have to, in my opinion, again, be able to stay balanced. They have to be able to stay ahead of the sticks, which, again, you could say for any game, any opponent, what have you. But listen, there aren't many more ferocious potential pass rushes. Even though last year at MetLife Stadium, they didn't allow a sack, and the offensive line is better, that doesn't mean you're going to do that again. Please understand, that has nothing to do with where I'm from or who I root for or who I rooted for. That has everything to do with common sense. Everything to do with common sense. Last year, on first and 10, the Commanders' offense ran 220 plays. They got 961 yards on those 220 plays. That's 12th in the NFL. 4.37 per play. They got 20 first downs, which was 19th. And they converted on first and 10, 9.09% of the time for another first down. That's not bad. If you can get 4.37 and second and 6, second and 5, second and a long 5, whatever the case might be, that's something you can work with. That's something you can work with. And I should say that was just rushing the football, running the football. On first and 10, passing the football, they did that 189 times, 17th in the NFL. They got 1,365 yards, 15th in the NFL. 7.22 per 54 first downs, which was 15th in the NFL. And they converted for another first down on first and 10 with a pass nearly 29% of the time. And then they also had 20 scrambles, as they call them, which was second in the NFL for 140 yards, which was fourth in the NFL, at a pop of 7 and 3 first downs. So really, I mean, you add that kind of to the rushing, even though it's a pass play that ends up as a run play, usually, almost always. So you kind of add that to the rushing, and you get, say, 240. You get just over 1,100 yards, right? So if you get 4.5 yards per rushing play on average on first down, are you doing okay? Yeah, you're doing okay. You're second in a long 5. You're second in 6. Can you do better? Of course. If you get 5.5, if you get 6, you're going to make your third down operation so much better. You're going to make it so much easier for your offensive line, so much easier for your quarterback. You might not have to go for it on fourth down as much. God forbid you actually handle your business in 3 downs instead of 4 and being reliant on a Superman rate of, what was it, 19 of 22 or 20 of 23, whatever the hell it was last year. The key, I believe on Sunday, will be also first down. Again, you get in 3rd and 2nd and 9, 2nd and 10, 2nd and 11, 3rd and 8, 3rd and 9, 3rd and 10. Against that giant front, you're going to be in trouble. It's going to be a long day. And maybe you'll get out of it sometimes, but don't count on it. And maybe we'll be sitting here scratching our head going, wait a second, I thought this offensive line was improved. Boy, did those guys really struggle. Man, Laramie Tunsil, are we sure? Are we sure about Josh Connerly? Are we sure about Brandon Coleman at left guard? Remember, the opponent gets paid to eat too. And if you serve the meal right into their hands, right in front of them, what are they going to do? They're going to devour it. And they're going to devour you. And I would also, oh, by the way, feel like this is going to be a game where they run to the perimeter, toss pitches, sweeps, outside zone, Debo on an end-around reverse, something like that. Trying to get, if Bill's active, trying to get him out on the perimeter so he can cut and get up the field. Austin Eckler on, you know, a short little pitch, whatever the case might be. You don't want to run necessarily right up the middle against this giant team. Right? Especially if Lawrence is back to close to 100%. I just don't know. You don't want to run. The last thing that I will say, like, for right now about this game, and this is just early preliminary thoughts that I've had throughout the show, we don't know if Andrew Thomas is going to play. The outstanding left tackle for the Giants, number 4 overall pick a number of years ago. I believe the Commanders would have gone there if they didn't go Chase Young because they needed a left tackle to replace Trent Williams. Maybe not, but that's what I believe. But he's been injured a lot the last 2 years. He is not a guarantee to play in this game. I think he'll play, but not a guarantee to play by any means. If he doesn't play, Von Miller, Frankie Louvu, whoever attacks that edge has just got to dominate. Because I would assume most of the game you'll see, like, Dorrance Armstrong at the left end or on the left side, I assume. But you'll see him, of course, certainly, right end, backside. But presuming, or if Andrew Thomas does not play, whoever plays, you've got to eat on that right side of the defense. Left side of the Giants. Now, if he plays, and if he's Andrew Thomas again, then it's going to have to be a more balanced, more distributed rush. But if he's not there, that's where you have to eat. That's where you have to control. That's where you have to create hay. And remember, he may not play. He may play. We don't know. We'll have a better idea tomorrow. I would assume he'll be limited tomorrow. So we might not know until Friday or even Sunday. But If he's compromised in any way or if he doesn't play, that's where you have to eat. All right, 301-230-0980. Couple of thoughts more on college football when we return, because the rest of the week will be all NFL and Commanders Giants, obviously, with a focus on the Team 980. We're streaming live on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and tune in if you want to hop in. 301-230-0980. Some thoughts on the hoax, some thoughts on Maryland when we return. All right, everybody. Good to have you with us. As we come down the home stretch, let out Willingham Burgundy and Gold today is coming up at 4 o'clock. So I wanted to take a little time. I mean, we sprinkled in a little bit of the college football earlier, but I wanted to sprinkle in a little bit more because I watched a bunch of it this past weekend, as many people did, and you know, listen, we can talk about the Giants and Commanders until we're blue in the face. Ultimately, we don't know what's going to happen. I'll try to give you as many insights as I possibly can think of. I'll have more tomorrow and more throughout the week. But we do have games to actually react to and games that were notable and important, including a couple of local games in which one team locally took on a pretty damn good powerhouse opponent, and the other took on FAU. And that was Maryland. But that was the team that won 39-7 on Saturday in College Park. I was watching the game on the Big Ten Network. Let me just tell you, what an absolute, you know, it is amazing how poor communication is. The game was on 980 with Johnny Holiday. But I was home on Saturday. I wanted to watch a bunch of college football. So I'm looking for the Maryland game in the commercials of the Ohio State-Texas game. Can't find it. It's not on Big Ten Network. It's not on FS1. It's not on this. Finally, I do a search, and I see Maryland football, Big Ten Network 1. So I don't know where that is. So it tells me 833 on Verizon Fios. I go to 833. And it's the same exact game, I think Purdue and somebody else, that was on regular Big Ten Network. So I'm like, well, bleep, what do I do now? I don't know. So I just like pull up the guide again. And 832 is another Big Ten Network too. And I go there and it's the same damn game, Purdue versus whoever. And I'm like, where is this Maryland game? Finally, the fourth attempt. After doing a search, after trying to find the game on any channel that I could, any of the normal college football broadcast channels, finally, after like two commercial breaks of searching, I finally find it on like Big Ten Network 3 or whatever it was. I mean, who knew that they even had that? But they don't need that. They were playing the same damn game as they were playing on the mothership on the Big Ten Network. On the other two, they just hid this game and had the wrong channel listed in their search guide.
Well, the network station might have different games on regionally, though.
That is fair. That is fair. I don't know, but I don't know why, if they have that ability, Metal, why in the Mid-Atlantic region you would have Maryland on a backup Big Ten Network channel and a game that doesn't have any local roots, any local ties on the main Big Ten Network. Meaning if you have the ability to switch in and out based on region, it was Purdue versus Ball State. If you have the ability to switch in and out, and I think what you're saying, if I understood correctly, like, all right, you're carrying Maryland, you're carrying Purdue, you're carrying maybe a third game, whatever it is. They're all at the same time, noon. You can, depending on what region you're in, put the Maryland game on the big on regular Big Ten Network, and then put the Purdue game, which doesn't have any local interest or local ties, on
Excuse
the Big
me,
Ten.
Excuse me, my mother went to Purdue.
Okay. But,
I care.
But my point being is most people in the Mid-Atlantic area are going to care about Maryland, right?
Sure.
And so I wanted to see Maryland. So as a consequence, and maybe I should have done a better job beforehand, but I was busy Saturday morning. I was, you know, at the gym, whatever. I was just trying to be healthy, for God's sakes, trying to live my life a little bit. And I didn't get back until 12:10. And the first thing I did was put on Texas Ohio State because it's number one versus number two or number three, depending on what rankings you were using. It wasn't to look for Maryland. And then it took me, again, two commercial breaks to finally find Maryland. But once I did, I found our guy Joe Beninati and Matt Millen calling the game. And on top of that, I got to see not only a beatdown by Maryland, but God, I got to see Malik Washington. On one particular throw, one of his three touchdowns in the second quarter, now he had all day to throw. He had a super clean pocket. But man, how many times have we seen a kid just, for whatever reason, overthrow that or underthrow it wide open on a wheel route down the right sideline. And the Glen Burnie Maryland native just dialed it up perfectly. Again, he had a great clean pocket. But 258, three touchdowns from Malik Washington. We talked about Maryland on Friday needing to get off to a 3-0 start. Nobody should be like, oh, this is great. This is going to be an awesome year because they beat up on Florida Atlantic. Uh-uh. But here's the point. Here's the point. A, they had to do that. One. Two, they have to be 3-0 going into Big Ten schedule, as we talked about on Friday. Three, they did the right thing in starting the freshman quarterback. The time is now. Mike Locksley is essentially, I think, maybe, sort of, although he's had a great recruiting class, coaching for his job. I mean, how many more years can you be mediocre? Right? Even though they made bowl games up until recently. What, the last... they made a bowl game... was it last year or 2 years ago? I can't remember now. I think it was last year. But it's go time. Start the rookie. Start the fresh. And against a perfect opponent, he lit him up. 258 through the air, 27 of 43, didn't play a lot down the stretch. I don't think the whole fourth quarter, I kind of lost interest. After a little while, they got pretty good run, run balance. They distributed the ball, 6-7 guys catching passes. So everything worked the way it kind of should have worked for Maryland. They got a pick six on defense. They only allowed 7 points. Perfect. Good job by Joe B. and Millen on the call. So that was good. When we return, Virginia Tech, not so good. On the other side of a final, that's right, final, trending alert on the afternoon right here, right now on the Team 980. All right, we mentioned Ohio State, and they were playing Texas over the weekend, and it was a battle, presumably, for number one, being that Texas was number one. Well, now, with Ohio State's win, they are number one. Texas dropping all the way to number 7 in the AP top 25 poll. Alabama out of the top 5, and Alabama falls all the way to, where is Alabama here?
I think 21, right?
Yeah, 21.
They
exactly.
Were 8.
Yeah, number 21 overall from number 8. I should say top 10, not top 5. My bad on that. A bunch of teams inside the top 10 losing. Miami again up from 10 to 5. Georgia up from 5 to 4. LSU jumps from 9 to 3 with their win on the road at Clemson. Clemson drops from 4 to number 8. Ohio State, again, the new number 1, and Penn State stays at number 2. Coming up, we will discuss Virginia Tech's debut on Sunday in Atlanta against South Carolina. Meanwhile, from college basketball, Hall of Fame basketball coach George Raveling has passed away at the age age of 88. So sad news there. Meanwhile, the Nationals back in action tonight after finally breaking the losing streak. 6:45 on the Fan, Odyssey app. Cade Cavalli on the bump against the Miami Marlins down at Nationals Park. And from the NFL, the week one opponent for the Commanders, the New York Giants, listing Jackson Dart as Russell Wilson's backup on their unofficial depth chart. However, Brian Daboll would not commit publicly one way or the other to whether Dart was actually the backup. And that's what's trending. All right, everybody, down the stretch we come. Final 20 minutes or so of the radio program. Still have Dum Dum of the Day. Got a number of candidates for that. Still trying to make my final decision. Don't forget, this radio showgram is brought to you by Staples. That's right, your local Staples has hot deals and super low prices throughout the store on everything for your business. And right now at Staples, save up to $125 off your print order. Exclusions apply. Visit staples.com/print for details. It ends 9/13, and save even more time with the Easy Rewards program at Staples. So there you have that. All right, so we mentioned Maryland. Good job, you know, again, it's early. It's certain, very early. You have to not go 3-0. I mean, you have to go 3-0, but you have to go 3-0 and then not get stomped like a bug when you enter the Big Ten schedule. That will be how you know this Maryland team is good, bad, or the same, or whatever. At Wisconsin to end out September. Again, they beat FAU. They took care of business. They got a short week this week, home for Northern Illinois. That's a pain in the ass program. Short week, home, but that's a pain in the ass program to deal with. Then Towson, also at home, with a little bit normal rest. But at Wisconsin, in game four for them, is where you'll know. If they go get stomped, which traditionally happens as soon as they enter the Big Ten schedule, or maybe not as soon as, but it often happens. I remember several times, good start, and then Penn State would be next, and right? I'm not saying it happens every year, relax, but my point being is, can happen. Like, if you lose, please, have it come down to a heartbreak. Don't get squashed like a bug. All right, more on that. But how about Virginia Tech? So Virginia Tech goes to Atlanta and plays a neutral field, we think, kind of, season opener in Atlanta against South Carolina, right? And that's probably not what you're ideally drawing up. You'd like to open up at home. You'd like to open up against a team that didn't feel like a caged animal and screwed from the playoffs last year, even though it was correct that they were not in the playoffs. They were on the fringe, but you'd like to believe. And listen, Virginia Tech, they lose Bashal Tutin. They lose Jalen Lane. They fire a couple of coordinators and coaches, brand new offensive line. They do have the veteran quarterback in Drones. But against a top 15 school, a top 15 program, who, oh, by the way, happens to be run by your longtime head coach's son, who was a longtime assistant at Virginia Tech, who's done a great job, ultimately, turning around the South Carolina program, to the point where they were 13th in the country coming in Shane Beamer, to lose 24-11 and to have things fall apart a little bit in the second half with the punt return for a touchdown, which we'll get to in a second, and then the long touchdown after you get a field goal, right, to kind of get back in the game, to feel like you've got a shot, I think it was, 17-11, if I'm not mistaken, with plenty of time left, where if you score, if you make a stop and a score, you could win. But Virginia Tech, this is the problem. It always feels like Virginia Tech has some flashes, can hang in there, can fight, can show some resiliency, but they run out of gas. Or they just can't find a way to make that extra big play. They were only down 10-8 at the half. Hell, 10-8 going into the fourth quarter. They did a pretty good job against Lenora Sellers. They did. He had a touchdown rush. He had one throwing. But, I mean, that guy's considered one of the better quarterbacks in college football. And yet Virginia Tech couldn't take advantage of him being very human. Very, fine, good, but not great by any means, not unbeatable. And part of it is because Kyron Drone stunk. You just cannot, under any circumstances, against any opponent, expect to win on essentially a road game against against a top 15 opponent, having five more incompletions or non-completions than completions. 15 of 35. No touchdown passes and two interceptions. 15 of 35. They just couldn't get it when they needed it. They just couldn't get it when they needed it. When they needed to sustain something, they just couldn't get it. And it's not because they didn't run the ball well. They ran the ball okay. It's not like they had no running, attack. You know, and guys made catches. Like, this game, to me, came down to two things. Kyron Drone not being good enough, and the special teams touchdown that they allowed. And one more thing on Drones. I mean, here's the thing. Again, 15 of 35 tells you everything you need to know, and the two touchdowns and so on and so forth. The two interceptions. You know, I mean, they weren't even terrible, terrible on third down. It's not like they went, 2 of 18 on third down. And you say, they weren't great, but 8 of 18 is fine. It's okay. Turned it over on downs once. It's not like they had 13 penalties for 120 yards. And you say, well, the game came down to that. It's not like they didn't run. They had 115 rushing. Yeah, granted, it wasn't like a big-time successful thing. But, I mean, Drone's got to be better. And it's just got to be better. Period. End of story. For Virginia Tech to have any chance, got to be better. Period. Got to be better. So that's that. So 0-1 for Virginia Tech. I mean, again, nobody should be surprised by that. They weren't going to beat South Carolina unless they played almost a perfect game. Now, coming up this Saturday, Vanderbilt, Lane Stadium, night game. Vanderbilt beat them in overtime to start out the year in Nashville last year, a game that Virginia Tech should have won. They have to win this game, right? Again, at home, place will be going nuts, even though they're 0-1. Vanderbilt's 1-0, okay, fine. But Vanderbilt's not by any means a powerhouse. They're not South Carolina, right? But they've got a pretty good quarterback, as we found out last year, not only against Virginia Tech, but remember, they beat Alabama. Diego Pavia is a pretty good quarterback. And if you don't get pass rush on him, if you don't tackle, if you just let him command the pocket, Virginia Tech's going to lose. Just because you're at Lane Stadium and Enter Sandman and all that stuff, it does not guarantee anything. And if they go 0-2, Virginia Tech, listen, I don't think Brett Pry is getting fired right away. But there are going to start to be rumors. They go against Old Dominion. We know Old Dominion beat them a couple of years ago, right? I mean, there's some games that they can win after that. You can't go 0-2. You just can't. Even though South Carolina is a totally reasonable loss. And here's one thing. How about Shane Beamer and Carolina playing what used to be called around here, and I guess what still is, Beamer ball, with his dad in attendance, his dad getting the game ball, his dad rooting for his son, South Carolina, as he should, over his longtime employer and alma mater, Virginia Tech. Right? That was kind of fitting. But also kind of, man, you played okay. You played okay if you're Virginia Tech. You didn't play good enough. You played okay. But every time you thought maybe they have a chance, South Carolina would make a big play. Whether it be the, you know, the big 64-yarder over the top that we were referring to late, or whether it be that punt return for a touchdown. You play okay is not good enough against top 15 schools. If you play okay on Saturday night at Lane Stadium against Vanderbilt, you might be able to get away with it. Might. Not definitely. You might. If you play okay on a alleged neutral floor against South Carolina, you got no chance. And even then, they sort of had a chance. Don't keep playing okay. You got to be better than okay. It's all right to be better than okay. That is, somebody should put that on a t-shirt. Maybe Linnell can take that for me again. He takes everything from me. He's coming up next with Burgundy and Gold today. But when we return, we say goodbye with Dum Dum of the Day. That's next on the Team 980 Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and tune in. Stay with us. All right, good to have you with us. Wrapping things up, making way for the L train and Burgundy and Gold today, coming up in just a couple of minutes. But first, you know what time it is, don't you, baby? All right, this is a sad and violent dum-dum of the day. I almost feel bad for this. Headline in the New York Post, two friends with friends like this, who needs friends at all, agree to shoot each other in the head while wearing Kevlar helmets. And now one's charged with murder. That's right. Dateline, Houston, Texas. 37-year-old Sean O'Donnell has been taken into custody at his home in Houston earlier this month. Why? In connection to the shooting death of his friend, Aaron Prout, a 34-year-old, was a native of the UK. This according to the Harris County Sheriff's Office down there in Texas. So what happened was, the two smart pals were inside O'Donnell's home, right? O'Donnell is the man accused of murdering his friend. They were in O'Donnell's home, firing at each other with a rifle while wearing the bullet resistant helmets, when Prout accidentally got seriously injured by the gunfire, as you would, you know, like, think might happen, like when you're shooting at somebody's head, probably in close range. I don't know. Well, he was transported to a local hospital. He died from his injuries, which is very, 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 very sad. Nobody knows exactly why they were doing this, but it's a reminder that the Kevlar helmets are not supposed to provide 100% protection. And they, again, took a presumably friendly game, of shooting each other in the head with guns, and it led to murder. And he was charged. O'Donnell was charged with murder and is currently booked in the jail, according to the Houston sheriff. And that's where he deserves to be for the rest of his life. But here's the thing. There's never anything good that comes out of shooting anybody. Never. There's never anything fun about, hey, let's play a game and see if these helmets hold up. There's never anything smart about doing anything with a gun. And without making this political, you can take that any way you want. But here's the thing. A lot of things are going to happen to me in my life. That ain't one of them. That ain't one of them. I've got that on lock. All right. Murder. from playing with guns.
Was it for like YouTube likes or something? I've heard of people doing this kind of stuff for like Instagram and whatever.
I don't know. It doesn't say metal. It doesn't say. Here's one thing that I know. Even with a Kevlar helmet, obviously, you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be pointing a rifle at anybody's head on purpose. Or in any way.
I'm no expert on guns, but I know the first rule of gun safety is you don't point a gun at anything you're not trying to kill.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Dum-dums of the day. Could you imagine being that dumb to actually engage in that, and then what that must feel like, rotting in jail, knowing that you killed your friend over a stupid game or a stupid challenge or whatever you were doing? All right, Linnell Willingham, Burgundy and Gold today coming up. I got to go buy a new car. Have a great Tuesday. Thanks to Metal Chris. Back tomorrow at 1 on the Team 980 Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, and TuneIn. If you missed any part of the show, check out the podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or on the Odyssey app. Thanks for being with us, everybody. Have a great Tuesday.